What's up, internet? My name's Nerdy.
And I'm Clarouge.
And this is the Roleplay Relay discussing Daggerheart.
Ooh, fancy.
Today we're going to be talking about the racial abilities that you get with every single race option currently available in the beta playtest. This is version 1.2 of the game that came out in March of 2023.
Came out a week ago for us.
So I just want to be clear that if you're watching this video in the future, some of these may be out of date, but I hope they're not, because evergreen content is the best kind of content.
And we got to remake the video. God damn it.
Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to go through every single race that you can play and the special ability that they get. We're going to try and come up with scenarios in which those might be useful. We're also going to tell you which ones are good and which ones aren't.
Okay, all right. Well, whoa. It's all going to be very subjective.
No, objective facts.
Bad and good, we're just going to split them into bad and good piles, and you're going to have to fight us in the comments, actually, if we're wrong, so.
It's going to be a pile of compliments to Spencer Stark and a pile of Spencer Stark, you naughty boy. This video is brought to you by our friends over at Gamer Sups. That's right. That's what this gorgeous hot lady cup is.
Hell yeah.
If you want a hot lady cup, they call them waifu cups. You can go to gamersups.gg. Mm-hmm. They have incredible flavors of energy drinks that we use to energize our day almost every day. Literally every day.
Yeah,
you can use coupon code Claroos, Claroos, for 10% off your order there and get your Gamer Sups or, recently added to the store, Gamer Soups.
Gamer Soups, like actual like instant noodle soups.
Yeah, I had the beef one yesterday. Pretty good. It's tasty and quick, which is what I want when I'm gaming. I only have between two rounds of Helldivers to heat up a soup.
Is that even enough?
Probably not. Helldivers moves quick. That's why you gotta have a wife to make food and drink for you while you are spreading democracy. All right, let's talk about Daggerheart. Clarus, do you want to pick up that first race and tell us what happens when you play as a...
Clank.
A Clank? What's a Clank?
Clanks are sentient mechanical beings built from such materials as metal, wood, stone, and clay to resemble humanoids, animals, or even inanimate objects.
Would you say they're robots?
They're robots.
Which is different from a ribbit. We'll talk about ribbits later.
Yes, very different. I guess you could play as a mimic chest.
It is interesting. Oh, interesting. You could play as a chest, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things I think is interesting about Clanks is by bringing that mud and the other natural things that you can be, it is the possibility of both playing as a robot, but also it gives the possibility of playing as a golem. Such as golems from Jewish folklore.
Right.
And so I think that there's a lot of variety possible in that description of Clanks kind of being anything that is
anything.
An inanimate thing that is given sentience rather than it being specifically a steampunk cogs and gears thing.
Yes, yes. Lots of creative liberty, which I think is pretty prevalent throughout.
Yeah, that's what Daggerheart's going for.
They're like, you know what? Do your thing. If you want to do it, freaking go for it.
And it's 2024. Do your thing.
I love that.
What's your ability?
Play as a Clank, you get purposeful design, where you decide who you were created by and for what purpose.
Mm-hmm.
When you generate your experiences at character creation, choose one that reflects this purpose and add a +1 to it.
It's an interesting ability.
It is.
It's fascinating because you basically can either take a +3 experience from the very start of the game, which I think is super useful, but you're going to have to talk to your DM about.
For sure.
If you don't understand experiences, basically they are like proficiencies in D&D.
Mm-hmm.
However, you decide what yours are at the beginning of the game.
You make them up.
Yeah, and so if you wanted to take, say, a proficiency in thievery, right? And you wanted to play a rogue with a thievery proficiency and you're playing as a clank, you could hypothetically start with either a +3 thievery.
Yeah.
Because you usually start with a +2 and a +1.
Yes.
You start with two experiences. And
so you could do a +3 and a +1, or you could do a +2 and a +2.
I think that in terms of the abilities we're going to talk about today, this is interesting because it's one of the few that I think affects your soft skills rather than your combat skills.
Yeah.
And affects the way that you're going to interact with the rest of the world more so than I think it affects the way you're going to interact with your battle abilities or your recovering from battle abilities.
Yeah. I think the experiences thing right now from the discourse that I've seen online, the experiences are a little bit daunting for people, especially new players. And so if you're making your very first character, unless you have, like, a solid idea, a grasp of what experiences are, I don't know if I would do it for, like, my first thing.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
You know, unless you've got, like, a DM who feels like they also got a good grasp on this and is like, well, tell me about your character. Oh, how about such and such for experiences?
Yeah.
Like, I like to play hide and seek, and maybe you're, like, really good at, like, not moving and stealthing, or bop them on the head where, I don't know, you get...
Bop them. Like... yeah. I want my experiences to be bop it.
Bop
twist it.
Twist it.
Pull it.
Lick it. yeah. You know what? And playing a
That's
bop
That's actually
it
really funny.
Would be
you
very
could be
fun.
A bop it clank.
You could.
And your experiences are just all of the options from bop it.
Wait, that sounds great.
I want to play this character now.
Yeah. All right. Wow. We're one in. We're already, like, generating character ideas. I love it.
Yeah. I think that, because Amadeus, the character that Brian played in our playtest one shot that we did last week, which you can still watch, it's up, he took self-taught as an experience.
Mm.
And now having DM'd that, I think that I would have said no. I think that
you
would I
would want to make it more specific.
Yeah, it's too general, and he was able to put it on a lot of things. It was a one shot, so I wasn't too concerned.
We were figuring it out.
But in a longer campaign, the definition of self-taught is just too, like, if he had a +3 in self-taught, and he's like, oh, I taught myself how to pick locks. Oh, I taught myself, you know.
Yes.
I think that you want to be careful with what your players choose as their experiences. But I think starting with a +3 and something you want to be really good at is a really
very
strong choice.
Very, very strong.
Yeah. It also makes sense for clanks, I think, to have kind of an ingrained experience.
They were built for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
Like, they could have actual, like, physical attributes that somebody added to make them good at a specific thing.
Yeah.
You know, so...
makes sense. All right, next up is daemons. Daemons have horns and colored skin. What
could they?
What other name could they go by?
Oh no, they're the daemons from Golden Compass.
Nope, they're definitely not those. Those of daemon ancestry are the humanoid descendants of the fallen gods who possess sharp canines, pointed ears, and horns that come in a variety of styles. They get two abilities. So we're already breaking the norm here.
The norm.
I guess there wasn't
we
a
went,
norm.
We've got 18 cards to go through, and we picked up one of them. There's no norm
we
yet.
We set a norm with one card, and then we broke it immediately. The first of their abilities is called Fearless. We printed the cards in black and white.
Are they Taylor Swift fans?
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah. I would love if all of the abilities had been named after Taylor Swift songs, like, suddenly.
That would be hilarious. Now I want to play a daemon that's a Swiftie.
I mean, all daemons would be Swifties, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Fearless, when you roll with fear, you may choose to mark a stress instead of the GM gaining fear. I'm glad they have two abilities because this one is terrible at low levels.
Not great at low levels.
Yeah.
And based on our experiences of playing and some of others that I have also seen, fear is a very abundant resource.
Yes.
So taking one away isn't that big of a deal unless, I believe... maybe I'm wrong here. Unless it's in combat, because would that prevent the initiative going back to the DM?
Not the way that I'm reading this. It prevents the GM from gaining fear.
Yes.
But rolling with fear does not force the DM to spend a fear to start his turn, or her turn, sorry. It just means that it is now the GM's turn and they take a fear.
For sure.
So I think that this would not... change that. I think this ability would be better if it clearly denoted that the in combat you can mark a stress to prevent the turn order from being passed to the DM.
Yes, I would love more clarification on that.
Yes,
because so maybe version 1.3.
There's so many ways for you to gather stress.
Yes,
and when you stop gathering stress, when you have no more stress, when you have no more open stress slots. You start taking damage,
and you don't have a lot of hit points.
Yeah, at low level, when you have 3 or 4 health, wasting stress on something that the DM is going to get so much of, just it doesn't really feel like a great trade-off until you have enough stress that you're not really worried about losing it.
Yes, I agree.
The other ability they have is... but at high levels, I can see how that could be a lot more useful.
Yeah.
But still, the GM gains so much fear. I just don't really see...
That's why I think, I want clarification on whether or not it's useful in combat, because that would change my opinion on it drastically.
Drastically. But as raw, as they say, I don't think it works that way, so I can't give it that.
Yeah.
Their other ability is much more useful to me. Dread Visage. You have advantage on rolls to intimidate other non-daemon creatures. I think that free advantage on any skill check is important.
Really good.
I also think intimidation is something that just can come up a lot.
I think that there are some abilities that are obviously geared more towards like combat, but mm-hmm. a lot of them are geared towards the actual role play, which again, pretty common throughout yeah. Daggerheart. They're really like emphasizing the role play aspect of TTRPGs, which I'm a big fan of. But yeah, that given advantage, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, and the fun thing about advantage in Daggerheart is that it's not a reroll. It is an addition, right? And I think that...
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. It is not two D20s because yeah. we don't roll with D20s. We have two D12s. So if you get advantage, you get to add a D6 to yes. that roll, which
and
is
so
pretty great.
Adding a D6 to intimidation, especially because the reality of Daggerheart is that every check is going to have to be a lot lower, right?
Yeah.
Just because of the way that a bell curve roll system works when you have two dice instead of one,
mm-hmm.
on a D20, every single number has the same chance of happening, right? But on a 2D12 system, your mid-range rolls have a far more frequent chance of happening than the two ends of the spectrum. And right. so for DMs, one lesson that we're going to have to learn in the way that we build our games is that we're going to have to lower checks so that they are a little bit more likely to happen mm-hmm. because it is far less likely to roll a 20 in a Daggerheart system that even though the max is a 24 than it is to roll a 20 in a D20 system
mm-hmm.
Because of that kind of bell curvification of having two dice instead of one.
Math.
So a +6 on the kinds of checked numbers that we're going to have in Daggerheart mm-hmm. is going to be a much bigger bonus, I think, than the... Because in a weird way, it averages out the same, right? I was looking at the math of it and it's about a +3.5 giving advantage on a D20.
Okay.
And it's also a +3.5 to give advantage in this with a D6, right?
Oh, okay. I love that someone did the math for that.
But realistically, the checks are going to be lower because of the way average rolls work on the dice.
Yeah.
And so a +3.5 when the average check is going to be lower
bigger.
Is more advantageous than an advantage in...
The other thing with that is like, yes, you could always roll a 1 on mm-hmm. a D6. But if you're rolling with advantage with two D20s, there's a chance of rolling double ones.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There is a chance of that advantage having absolutely no benefit. Except to be like, whoa!
A double one in this system is a crit success.
It's actually a crit success, which, well, yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
There is no crit failure. There's only crit success. Speaking of combat abilities, mm-hmm. let's go to the...
Dracona. I love that. Dracona resemble wingless dragons in humanoid form and possess a powerful elemental breath.
Ooh, y'all played Baldur's Gate 3?
You know what I always imagined?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Five Gum commercials?
Yes. Oh
were
my god,
like,
they were wild. Yeah.
They were just like blow like frost and suddenly like the world iced over and you're like, wow, that's really powerful gum. Anyways,
I
want
to play a Dracona whose elemental breath comes from the fact that they're always chewing five gum.
Five gum, yeah.
I think that is, again,
hilarious.
Funny character.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what's fun about these abilities, is they are inspiring those role play choices.
I love that. So, if you play a Dracona, you get elemental breath, which at character creation, you choose one of the following elements to describe your elemental breath. So, you got fire, ice, lightning, poison, and acid. What you do is you spend a hope to make
an... Is acid an element?
Doesn't
matter. Sorry.
I mean, lightning also is not... I mean, I don't know. It doesn't... Look, if we're going by Avatar rules, no.
Fire.
It doesn't matter.
Water. Air.
Blood.
Acid.
Yeah. It doesn't have the same ring to it.
For 100 years, we lived in harmony until the acid benders...
Honestly,
came.
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
That is terrifying.
I'm still more scared of bloodbenders, but go on.
I would be too. Spend a hope to make an instinct roll using your breath against an enemy or group of enemies within close range.
Mm-hmm.
Deal D8 magic damage to all enemies you succeed against.
All?
Yes.
Wait. In every direction?
Yes. So I think you can ask your DM whether or not
the group...
it's a group...
So the way that groups work in Daggerheart is that if enemies are within melee range of one another,
mm-hmm.
they can be considered a group of
yes.
enemies. And so you and your DM can decide what the range on that is, how
mm-hmm.
far away something can be from the center point to become part of the group.
Yeah.
But it does allow a little bit of leeway. I think it is particularly helpful in Theater of the Mind games.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that this hits within very close range. I mean, that's within 15 feet. It's a pretty good, or within 10 feet. That is a pretty good, it's a pretty good ability in combat.
Oh, for sure. I also like removing the rigidity of, like, it is a X foot cone. Because realistically, if you were blowing fire out of your mouth in a sweeping motion.
Yeah.
As opposed to a, like, focused stream ahead of you. Like, you can, you would have the ability to direct
a little bit,
that damage a little bit better. And I like being able to, you know, if we were in a combat session and there's a bunch of enemies that are in a straight line that are all in, like, very close range to one another, as opposed to, like, spread out, but they're all a certain amount apart. Like, I can choose to hit all of those in a line or in a circle or whatever it is that we determine would be an appropriate size for that attack.
Yeah, I do think that this gets into the beginning of that conversation of, I think that if you're going to play Daggerheart, you and your GM have to be able to have those open conversations
for
like make those decisions together in a healthy way.
And be willing to be flexible on it, because, you know, you might try something and you're like, you know what, this either is too powerful, it doesn't work, or this doesn't feel like big enough, let's do something to make it better.
I agree. We're going to move on to the next one, which is mine to read.
Go for it.
It is a race that has never been in a fantasy TTRPG setting before.
Never, brand new.
Nope, not at all once ever. They invented this. It is the dwarf.
Wow, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, not once. Dwarves are most easily recognized as short humanoids with square features, dense musculature, and thick hair. I really want to picture them as being Minecraft characters where, like, they are square? Literally squares. Their ability is increased fortitude. When you should take physical damage, you may spend 3 hope to only take half the damage instead.
I think this ability is great.
I think the cost is too high.
No, really?
Yeah, I think it should be 2. I think it should be 2 hope. I think 3 is more than half of your hope meter, because you max out at 5. I think that 2 would be a better... Just because... This is an ability that... The problem is that it doesn't scale well to me, because I think that it gets into one of the things about Daggerheart that I think is a little bit complicated of all damage being a little bit equal past a certain point.
Yeah.
So if you take 30 damage or you take 150 damage, it doesn't make a huge difference.
Yeah.
I think that this is an ability that is very expensive and very niche to when a very particular amount of damage comes in. Like, there's a window... The window on the upper end of where this ability is no longer helpful hits pretty quick, especially at lower levels. Like, this ability is perfect for when you are trying to get either severe damage down to major damage,
right,
or super severe if you are playing with that homebrew rule.
Yes.
That's not really a homebrew rule. It's in the book, which is if they do double your severe damage, you take 4 HP health.
Yeah.
I just think that this is an ability that hits a very niche range of HPs for you, and so because it is so niche, I think that the cost should be a little bit lower. If I could spend like an additional hope to maybe reduce it by a little bit more or something like that, I could see more use for it.
So I'm gonna jump in because I think, like, we've played once and I got to be a player, and I actually really think you accumulate hope very quickly. 3 to me actually seems totally reasonable. I used 3 to do that, like, tag team up, and then I was back up to like 3 or 4, like, pretty quickly. And so I think that it being 3 is kind of like high risk, high reward, because the risk is you might not roll with hope for a while, but you also might. You might get those back real fast, depending on how your game is moving. So I think this is going to take a little bit of playtesting to find the right balance. But for me, 3 does not seem unreasonable at all.
I think it's more that the ability for me is... Because of the way health works, and because of the ranges and how you take, like, 4 to 7 damage is 1 HP off, and 8 to... This is an ability that is really only for specific amounts of damage, not for any hit, right?
And it also is dependent on what class you take.
What do you mean?
Well, depending on your class, your damage thresholds are different.
Yeah.
So...
I don't know. It's an ability that, like, I understand that there are ways to use it. I totally do. Yeah. I just think that they are... I think that if it was 2 hope... it would be used more often for a wider range, whereas maybe. I think that it's really it's an ability that you kind of save for if you're going to die.
I guess. I think maybe if you were to do Two Hope, maybe playing around with only being able to use it once a session would be interesting. Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll play around with that. That's an interesting idea.
I also just think at low levels, it's not something you're going to use very often. Because having your damage, say you have from 8 to 4, you're still taking an HP, you only have 3 or 4 HP. Mm-hmm. It just feels a little too constrained by the numbers and the math of when it's actually valuable to do it. Mm-hmm. Versus the other abilities that you might have with Hope, that you might be able to spend Hope on either healing...
Yeah. I'm curious now. Because
there are abilities
that let
you use... There are abilities that you use 1 or 2 Hope to heal.
Yeah.
And... So the value of that might actually be a greater reward than this is.
Oh, like there might be a better version of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we have also something that never been put into a fantasy setting before ever. Elves.
What?
Are typically...
An elf?
I know.
Are there half elves?
Well...
Not technically.
You can be half anything if you want. Very fun. I love that. We'll talk about that at the
end. You
want to
say that your mom's a mushroom and your dad's a frog?
Go for it. Elves are typically tall humanoids with pointed ears and acutely attuned senses.
That is something new. I've never heard of a tall humanoid with pointed ears.
Yeah, no, that.
Do you think they
happens.
Have straight blonde hair and unlimited arrows in their quiver?
Probably. Mm,
cool, cool, cool.
Yeah. They have something called celestial trance. During a long rest, as one of your actions, you may choose to drop into an elven trance. When you do, roll a number of d8 equal to the stress you have marked and clear all stress. If any of these dice have a matching value, also clear all HP.
Mm-hmm.
Hit points, HP.
OP.
This is really good.
It's a really good ability. Because for a number of reasons. The first is it encourages you to take stress as much as possible. Because the more stress you take, the higher chance that you're going to get your health back for free on your long rest.
But higher risk, higher reward again, because if you get screwed over and you are taking stress and then you start taking HP and then you don't roll those doubles,
then you'll still have your other long rest abilities to get them back. But if you use this
first... It just
doesn't
clear all of it, but yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I'm just saying that, like, this is literally an ability that gives you all of your stress for free when you long rest. Because I don't think that this counts as one of your two abilities, right? Oh, no, it is as one of your actions.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
As one of
That's
your
That's a little bit less OP.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you're basically, you have the chance to get rid of all of your stress and health every long rest. And if you don't get your health, you get your stress off, and then you can use your other long rest action to get your health back. I think this is a great ability.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. And I also love that they played into the, like, you know, the D&D trope of, like, elves and they're, like, not having to sleep as long. They were like, let's make something that is, like, rest-related, but is not that, oh, half your party rests half as long so they can start doing stuff while the other has to, you know, finish resting.
I also think that, like, it's just so funny to have critical rests. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
you can have a critical
rest.
You can
critical
rest
attacks.
So hard.
Yeah. You like, can rest so, you
so
rest
hard.
So much better than usual.
Yeah.
And you know,
you're an elf.
We've
and
all,
you're just better than everybody.
We've all had critical rests. Everyone remembers that one sleep where they're like, that was the best time I've ever slept.
You're like, I don't feel tired. Like,
yeah.
I feel good. What is happening right now?
Yeah. I love the idea of critical rests.
It's, I love that.
You should always roll for rest. Not because
roll
there's a downside
rest.
To rest, but because you could critically
you
rest.
You could critically. I want to make a podcast called Critical Rest. It's just like sleep sounds.
It's just you sleeping.
No, that's my sleep stream on Twitch.
Oh,
critical
coming
rest.
Soon. Critical Rests with Claris Polaris.
That honestly sounds great.
Next up is a character class that we are used to, because you played one in our one-shot.
I did.
That is the Fairy. Mm-hmm. This is another one that is, like the Clanks, lots of role-playing potentials. They've said that it can be more bug-like, or you can have the more traditional fairy tale fairy. It's really up to you and how you want it to look.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of cool ideas here. But they also have two abilities, like the Daemons did.
Mm, yes.
Every time I say Daemon, I can only think of the freaking Blacksmith Baldur's Gate.
I know.
What
I
a hot, trans man.
What?
There's a whole thing going on Twitter right now. Voice actor said some anti-trans shit, and so they're like, well, Damon's trans now, and we're gonna make a bunch of trans art about your character. Fuck you, dude. Anyway,
fair.
So fairies have two abilities. One, they've got wings, so they can fly. You can mark
they can fly.
Mark a stress to take flight while until your next roll with fear. Until fear. Oh wow.
Yes.
I really should not have let you fly on your owl because of this ability. While flying, your evasion score increases by +2.
Yeah.
That's sick.
It's pretty
rad. If you're
rad.
Playing as a rogue, adding another 2, if you already have a super high evasion, you're in leather armor, you know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're playing any kind of squishier class,
yeah.
having that evasion to, you know, not take damage is great.
Yeah. I also think that...
+2 is also a lot.
Marking one stress to potentially have +2 for multiple turns.
Uh-huh.
Pretty crazy.
Well, and it's only like
what?
Oh, and it, yeah, it goes until you roll with fear. Like
yeah,
it,
oh yeah, yeah. That's why I mean multiple
for
turns,
a while.
Right?
Yeah.
It is one of those things though that gets into I think a longer conversation I want to have about Daggerheart, about the way in which it incentivizes you to not do stuff. But that is a conversation I think we'll have at a later date.
That might be a separate video.
I think it will be.
It's an interesting concept that I'm not used to, and I'm trying to wrap my head around.
Yeah, how the system encourages classes and characters sometimes to be passive.
Yeah.
And I do want to talk about it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Because
if you want us to make a video about that, comment below.
Do it. all right, then we're going to say Luckbender is its other ability, because it is. That's just a fact. Once per session, after you are an ally in close range, makes an action roll, you can mark a stress to allow a re-roll of the duality dice. If you do, take the new result. Free lucky.
Pretty great.
It's a good feat.
It is.
It's only once per session.
Yeah.
Which I think is a weird choice.
I also think once per session is a weird choice because some people play for 90 minutes and some people play for 8 hours.
Yeah, I think that if I was DMing this, I would homebrew a lot of the once per sessions out of the game and I would make them once per long rest.
Yes. I would do like...
Because the D&D feat lucky gives you 3 rerolls per long rest.
Yes.
This is giving you 1, so it's already a less good feat than lucky.
Yeah, because you already get something else for being a fairy.
So I would give you 1 reroll per long rest. To me, is not a lot. I don't think that that drastically impacts the game.
Yeah.
I do think that once per session is so sparing that I almost think that we play usually for 4 hours. That's our usual game session time. I think once in 4 hours to have an ability, especially because you have a limited number of spells in Daggerheart, right?
Yes.
You can only have 5 on your plate at a time. And so I think having some of these abilities be once per session, A, hard to remember, but also B, I think that allowing some of these abilities to be a little bit more prevalent when your characters are already going to be limited in how much other action economy they have and what choices they have with their abilities and spells because of the 5 rule in your dice vault, or your domain deck, your loadout. You can only have 5 at a time. I think that I as a DM, I would homebrew this to once per long rest.
Okay.
That's
fair.
But I can also understand, like, you might have 3 sessions without a long rest, like we did for Dragonlance at one point for our campaign that we play every Saturday. Little plug.
Hey.
Over at youtube.com/nerdynightly and twitch.tv/nerdynightly. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that maybe it depends on the campaign that you're playing, but 1 reroll per session just seems a little bit light to me.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Next up, we have the fawn. You want to play a little cute goat guy, Mr. Tumnus over here? Those of fawn ancestry resemble goats in humanoid form with curving horns, square pupils, and cloven hooves. Yep.
What?
Yep. It says that they have square pupils.
I love that I'm like, oh yeah, insect fairies. I'll buy into that. Clanks? Sure. Square pupils?
Nah, that's the line.
Isn't how light works.
Yeah, no, that's the line. Fuck your magic. We don't care about it. You
As can't the DM, I would homebrew that out. You can't have square pupils. I don't like it.
Well, I don't want to play at your table then.
I genuinely think that if you had square pupils, your peripheral vision would be fucked.
I have no idea.
I'm not joking. I think that would... Someone who knows science, please help.
Science.
What does square pupils do to your eyes?
We should ask Hank Green. We should write one of those letters into their
podcast.
Dear
Hank and John.
Yeah.
So Daggerheart.
So, can you have square pupils? And if you did, how would that affect your vision?
All right, what's their ability? I can't believe how much that threw my brain.
They get the ability Headbutt. Give the GM one fear to headbutt an enemy you move into melee with. The target immediately takes D8 physical damage and can't be targeted again by this attack during the fight.
Huh.
Basically, just like get a free attack.
That
at
is...
the cost of a fear.
Okay. Wow, that might be the worst ability yet. Honestly.
It's not my favorite.
It is only useful at low levels. Because once you get to the point where their minor threshold for an enemy is 8, you basically are just doing stress damage to enemies.
Yeah. The one thing that is interesting about these cards is that it just says D8. It doesn't say, like, 1D8 or, like, D8 based on your level. It's just...
D8 is 1D8.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it was based on your proficiency... Like, if it was a D8 per your proficiency bonus, I think that I would... It's not bad.
Yeah.
But if it's still a D8 at level 10, why would you ever give your GM fear?
I don't mind giving the GM fear. I think fear accumulates very quickly and is spent very quickly. I don't see that as a problem. I just don't really know if it's worth... Because you have to move into melee with to do the damage, and then you cannot do that damage again to them during this entire fight.
I understand the idea of, like, an attack that always hits, right?
Yes.
Like, there is sometimes a benefit to that.
Yes, like, a lot of times bludgeoning damage feels like if you hit, it doesn't really matter, but it does feel like that kind of thing where it's like, as long as you make contact, you are hurting that person.
Yeah, I think the cost, the GM getting fear, which if they want to spend that fear, they can make it their turn immediately.
Yeah.
So the GM can basically take the next turn, after you've dealt what is, to be honest, not much damage.
No, I would love to honestly see this ability paired with something like a stun or a grapple. Like,
it affects the enemy in a bigger way.
Yes, yeah, and in a more permanent way. Because, like you said, the damage might be negligible. It may do nothing at higher levels. But if you are able to kind of almost stun lock them, grapple them, like, maybe you have to stay there in that grapple, but your horns are locked. Like, you know when, like, rams fight and they literally horns. I think that maybe that might be a way to beef this ability up a little bit, because right now it does not entice me.
It doesn't say anything about scaling that damage. Immediately takes D8 direct physical damage.
Yeah.
Oh, does direct physical damage mean against its HP, though? Not...
Direct physical damage?
Because if it's D8 direct HP... Okay, if direct physical damage means that it goes against its HP, so you could potentially do 6 HP damage to a target, then I think that this is worth it.
Wait, what do you... No, that's not what that means.
I just have never...
6 HP?
Like,
what do you mean?
I've never seen direct physical damage on any of the other cards that we've read.
Okay.
So, like, let's look at the Dracon ability to make D8 magic damage.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's still damage.
Yeah. I see what you're trying to dig out of this, but I don't think that it's there.
I'm just trying to make it worth it, right? Yeah. I think that at level 1, that's a fine ability.
Sure, fine. Right? No problem.
I just think that the way that scales versus the way that an elf's ability scales in terms of taking away maybe 12 stress on a long rest.
Yeah.
For an action as opposed... I don't know that it's as useful.
It is an ability as well that you have to consider what kind of class you're going to make to be able to actually utilize it. Because because
why would you be a spellcaster?
Yeah, you have to make the conscious decision to move into their melee to use this. And then you are in melee range of somebody who might be able to knock you out.
That's a really interesting point, yeah.
That is a high risk for not very much...
For not much reward.
Reward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there was like a stun or a daze or like something like that attached to it, I think it would make more sense.
Any kind of like condition with it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This is now going to be the Firbolg. You know them as the cow people because Matt Mercer made a mistake one time. that's a true story.
Oh.
Firbolgs were not nearly as cow-like until Matt Mercer called them bovine in a stream of Critical Role and they became cows.
I love that.
Yeah.
Matt Mercer has the power of God.
No, he has the power of...
the GM.
No, he has the power of Vax. Fucking Liam O'Brien misinterpreting him.
Oh.
Yeah, that's literally how it happened. Which is very funny to me.
Incredible.
Firbolg, natural calm. Whenever you should mark a stress, roll 1d6. On a 6, you take no stress. Pretty great ability.
Pretty great.
1 out of 6, you don't mark a stress when you're using an ability that uses stress. That's a pretty great ability.
Yeah, it's basically just getting, free stuff.
Because you're rolling a d6 a lot in this game if you have that ability, right? Like, if you roll with fear and your DM decides that the fear part of it is that you take a stress, then you roll.
Oh, you're rolling with stress.
No. So if you roll with fear, one of the options is that a DM can say that because you failed, or because you succeeded, you take a stress, and that's what the fear element of that roll was.
Okay.
So that would be a d6 every time that happens. Any ability that you have that is use a stress to use this bigger ability, roll a d6. The chances of rolling d6s constantly and preventing a lot of stress, that's pretty good.
And that's any time you get, hit but not able to pass your damage threshold, right?
Yeah, so anytime you get hit for less than your minor damage threshold, or you could use your armor slot to take yourself under your minor damage threshold and then roll a d6, roll a 6, no stress. There's a lot of, consequences in the roleplay of this game that you will luck out of, because rolling a 6 on a d6 isn't that uncommon.
No. Yeah. Like, a 1 in 6 chance is totally reasonable. I love this ability. I think it's great. It is definitely going to be on the player to remember every time stress, I have to roll a d6 because I can see
the GM's not going to remember for you.
No.
Know your abilities,
that's
tables.
On you. moving on to the fungrel.
These are some of my favorites. I love mushrooms. I don't eat mushrooms, but I love mushroom people.
I don't know. I watched The Last of Us, and I was like, no.
Oh, I would have joined up. I want to be a clicker so bad.
No, I'm okay. The mushrooms can have you. Fungrels resemble a mushroom in humanoid form, bearing the features of the fungus from which they descend.
Mm-hmm.
Their ability is always connected. So to speak to other fungrel across distance to access their hive mind of information, make an instinct roll. At character creation, describe what ritual you must perform to tap into this connection. This is pure roleplay ability here. Like, this, you're not going to, sit down in combat and be like,
yeah.
Hello, message spell. It's going to be for, I think, a lot of lore heavy campaigns.
Yeah.
A lot of political heavy campaigns, which the
or
potential...
that one shot where your characters are like, we're lost. Do the thing to see if we make it.
Please.
Do the thing to see where we need to go.
Yeah.
I think that this one is asking a lot of GMs. I think this one is a lot of work for DMs, because of the what do the mushrooms in the area know?
What do mushrooms know? Yes.
But at the same time, I think if you do have a GM that really leans into that roleplay, I think this could be one of the most fun and unique abilities for your game, right?
I love the idea of I'm almost reminded in a way of the Wheel of Time, where Loial, the Ogier, leaves his people. And I just would imagine him trying to contact his people to ask them very, very important questions. And they're like, what are you doing out there? You need to come home. What crazy situations have you gotten yourself into?
Or just I could imagine Nadpod playing with this in campaign one with Emily being like, I want to contact the Crick.
The Crick.
And then be just like, I don't know where you are, what you want to know, but there's something wrong down the creek.
Something wrong. It's still wrong. It was wrong, and it's still wrong.
I think that, for GMs, there's so much potential here. I also could see this being a lot of work.
Yeah, for sure. However, I will say that if you have a player who is a fungrel, you already have to do the work of building in that race into your world.
Yeah, that's true.
So, is it that much additional work? Maybe not planning work, but maybe some more improvisational work.
Yeah, it just says across distance, and I don't know what across distance means.
I think it means any distance.
I also make an instinct roll.
Yeah.
This is one of those ones where I would have a lot of fun with my player rolling with fear.
With fear?
And being like, oh no, the bad fungrels know where you are now. And so, I think that there's a really fun way to, build in that there is an evil mushroom that's coming for your character, and every time you tap into the hive mind, there's a chance they know what direction you're in.
That's wild.
And
I was thinking, if rolling with fear and having, literally, horror sounds playing in your head, You know, or you have, like, a weird bad connection, like, on dial-up. And you're like, I'm sorry, what did you say? And you just get, like, a couple of words, and that's all that comes through.
Or if you, like, really want to fuck with your players, they, like, tap into, like, the sounds of a child dying.
Oh, my God.
Like, they roll, like, a one with fear, or, like, a 12 on their fear dice, and you're like, it's so bad.
It's bad.
Like,
it's everyone so is dying. Bad. The mushrooms are all on fire, and you are listening to their burning, dying screams.
The air temple is under attack by the Fire Nation.
Oh, my God.
All right, I think that one's me.
We're halfway there.
Yeah, there's so many races. 18. And guess what? No bioessentialism in any of them. None of these are evil automatically. Isn't that gorgeous?
Isn't that nice?
Galapas. Named, I'm assuming, after the Galapagos Islands, which is an interesting choice.
I didn't think that
isn't that where the turtles... Isn't that where Darwin's turtle discovered those turtles?
I thought Darwin discovered finches.
Oh. I might be mixing things up. Anyway,
yeah,
I'm assuming this is based on Galapagos Islands. Those of Galapa ancestry resemble anthropomorphic turtles with large domed shell in which the head and limbs can retract inside for defense. Mm. I think you guys all know where this is going. Their ability is the shell of protection.
Uh-huh.
The shell on your back always protects you. Add your proficiency to your armor score. Not great at low levels, but pretty great at high levels.
Yeah. Once your proficiency... is up a little bit, I think this ability is pretty great.
Yeah.
Any kind of defensive ability to... You only have so much HP, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So any kind of defensive ability, I think, is pretty useful in this game.
Yeah, and I think that the way that proficiency scales... I mean, you're never going to get it too high, but I do think that if you take an armor that has a lot of slots, like this... You can make this ability better by the choices that you make, right? If you're going to take, like, I think leather armor only has 3 uses. This is much less useful for a spellcaster in leather armor than it is for a seraph in heavy armor. Mm. Where you're not only are you going to have a higher armor score that you're adding to, but you're also going to be able to use that more often.
Yes,
definitely. So this is an ability that I think is interesting. I think that it suits the race really well, but I also think that it allows the player freedom to choose how useful it is based on the other decisions that they're making.
Yeah, 100%. The next we have are giants. Very tall humanoids with long arms, broad structure, and 1 to 3 eyes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to play a triclops.
A triclops.
There
That's
are
fun.
Giants in the sky.
Yeah, I love that. I love that it's like, eyes, you got however many you want. Pretty
also,
much.
Like, who doesn't love a cyclops? You know what I mean? Every fantasy thing has
Jean
a great
Grey
cyclops.
But it's fine. Grey.
I wouldn't say that. They've got kids together.
There's a whole back and forth. You know what I mean?
No, you watch the movies too much.
Sure.
In the comics, they're in a throuple with Wolverine.
Yeah.
That's not a joke. That's
no,
just
I know,
a, that
I
is
know.
A thing. Sorry for spoiling a comic from 8 years ago.
That's fine.
6 years ago?
I think, like, you know, I think 5 years after that, you just kind of,
Yeah.
If you wanted to read that comic, get on. What are you waiting
Jean
for?
Jean Grey and Cyclops have been sleeping together for like 80 years.
No,
I think
I
she likes him. What's the ability?
Maybe a little bit. Or he's just really good. So endurance, you gain an additional hit point slot at character creation.
I mean, that's pretty sick.
That's so simple and powerful.
Useful at low levels.
Yes.
It's one of those things you kind of scale out of, but...
Yes. You get it right away, which kind of makes you more of a BAMF at first, and then everyone, you know, catches up to a little bit. But you are always gonna have that one extra.
If this was their only ability, I would say it's not great. But because they get 2, I think this is pretty great.
Yeah. Their other ability is reach. Any melee weapon you wield has its range increased to very close. So, explaining ranges is a little nebulous. They are kind of what you decide at the table. Melee range is obviously what you know in D&D as, like, within 5 feet.
Yeah.
Right? Like, side by side, fighting one another. So you have melee, you have very close, you have close, far, very
close. Those are the
far.
Ones that matter for this, though, because...
Yeah.
Melee is 5. Very close is like 10 to 15, right?
Yeah.
So being able to punch, even spellcasters, this could be really useful. There are melee spell weapons in this game that would allow you to cast your spells within a melee range. And mm-hmm. So there are multiple ways that you could do this. I think that this would be a really great way to build a monk kind of style where you would take a melee arcane gauntlets, which are a melee magical weapon, and put them on the giant. So you would basically...
Your arms are just so long.
Yeah. You could almost play Monkey D. Luffy that way.
Oh, you could do a whole One Piece campaign.
Yeah, by having the, like, extended reach. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't That's exactly fun. Be Luffy, but you could say it. That he's just... When he's in combat, he's stretched out and rubbery.
Sure.
And so that could be the way that you explain Monkey D. Luffy's abilities.
I mean, the giants say that they have, like, very long arms. So I just want to see the character art of, like, all these, like, really tall people with arms that, like, drag on the ground. You know what I mean?
I also think, like, Monkey D. Luffy, very, very endurance-based, right? He can take a hit. He can take some damage. So yes. I think that if you build a Monkey D. Luffy using the giant stat block, I think it makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's definitely, like, a small boy, but it's fine.
Don't Not in combat.
Yeah.
He's a big boy in combat. Yeah, he's only small.
He gets to pick, you know? And we like having choice.
Yeah. Next up is a race that is usually problematic, and I think they've actually danced around every single issue with them somehow. I think the way that Daggerheart does goblins... is
it's great.
Not offensive in any way, no, but cute as fuck.
I love them. Yeah. I want to play a goblin so bad.
One of the people who worked at Darrington Press, Sam Maggs, who worked on this game, mm-hmm. She tweeted out the picture of Ratchet.
Yes!
Not Ratchet.
The
female Ratchet.
Yeah.
From the PS5 game. I haven't played it, but I own it.
I know, she's so cute.
It is.
I don't remember her name, because I played for like 5 minutes.
But anyway, so... The goblins do kind of look like Ratchet and her, which I think is very cute. Their ears are amazing.
I was literally, like, when I read the description, I was like, oh, Fennec Fox.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah. They're definitely furrier and less, like, green with big noses.
Sure.
Danger Sense is their ability. Once per short rest, you may mark a stress to make the GM reroll an attack roll. If it still hits you, reduce the incoming value by your proficiency.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how high your proficiency can get in this game, but even, like, basically being able to lower damage by 4, even mm-hmm. if 4 is the maximum, that's pretty great on a failure, right? But,
yes, that is the one thing that I like, is I hate when you spend an ability and it's just wasted, like, because it doesn't work,
yeah.
or it doesn't hit, or whatever it is, and it just goes to waste, and that just feels very bad.
Yeah, it is the difference between Fireball doing half damage on a failure, and, like, Disintegrate doing zero.
Yes, exactly.
But the interesting thing here is that this is not once on a short rest, there's a reroll. The fairies, their one is once per session, you get a reroll. But goblins, if you have 3 long rests, you could do this... you could do this 12 times in a session, right?
Oh, if you had short rests.
Because it's every short rest.
Yeah.
And you can only short rest 3 times per long rest in Daggerheart.
Yeah.
So it is just interesting where, like, this is an ability that I don't think is crazy powerful, but you can use often enough that I think it has value.
Yeah, it's basically like, what is it? Is it, what's the D&D spell? Is it Silvery Barbs?
It is, but you don't get to give it advantage.
No, which is totally fine. Yeah. But here's the thing. It's like, for example, you have Silvery Barbs. You can use as many spell slots as you want to dedicate to that spell as you want. This is just once per short rest, which means only once per combat.
Which means save it for those big, big damage moves.
Yeah.
I like the goblins a lot. I really want to play goblin. I want goblin art. I think the Daggerheart design for goblins is cute as shit.
Yeah, they did good with that one.
What's next?
Next is halfling. Typically smaller humanoids with large mm-hmm. hairy feet and prominent rounded ears. Never seen those before.
No, I don't know what a halfling is. Oh my god. Will you not breathe?
It's my breath weapon.
Will you not breathe, please?
I will not breathe. Little Lucky, at the beginning of each session, give everyone in your party a hope. You may also reroll a 1 on your hope die. If you do, take the new result instead.
This is a pretty good ability.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, being able to kind of like front load your sessions with more hope, because you get 2 hope at the beginning. Well, actually, you get 2 hope at the beginning of a campaign. I don't know if you
campaign.
Get, you don't. Yeah, so you don't get those back. But
no, that's just like we are starting a new campaign. Here, have a present.
Being able to start the session with an extra hope, I think, is actually a nice little boost. Especially if you're, like, if you ended the last session a little bit fucked.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also another thing that I'd be like, once a day. Once per long rest.
Once per long rest instead of once per session.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to track that. Also, like, that means that you would get, you could get a hope in the middle of a combat in a way that I think would come out of nowhere.
No. At the beginning of each session.
Yeah. And so if your session begins in the middle of a combat...
That is true.
I just think it's kind of an arbitrary time. And you know what? I think that might be what it is that if you say, like, once per long rest,
yeah,
you understand where it's coming from in within the role play. Whereas when it's once per session, I feel like it's just kind of, it like, our last session of Dragonlance,
yeah,
that was our pre-tape one, we ended in the middle of a conversation because we were running out of time, right?
Right.
And so I think that, like, in the middle of this conversation, suddenly everyone feels more hopeful, even though the conversation's not great and the world's bad. I feel like roleplay-wise, it feels a little arbitrary.
Well, and I think that you bring up a good point in that because so much of Daggerheart is geared towards the roleplay. Mm-hmm. Roleplay first. I think having a roleplay moment to fit in these kinds of abilities is actually better for the story. So, like, I hear what you're saying.
Our Kender in our Dragonlance campaign loves to make breakfast for everybody every morning.
Yeah.
And so I think that if Brian wanted to role play that as being him giving hope to the party for the day,
yeah,
I would really love that. I would buy into, like, oh, the hope that is being inspired in this group is coming from something.
Yeah.
As opposed to sitting down for my TTRPG and going, okay, before we start, what are all of the once per session things that we need to mark right now.
Yeah.
Which just feels like accounting to do before the game starts, as opposed to something that our characters are bringing into the world. Does that make sense?
Interesting. Yeah.
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 That's my feeling on it.
No, I think that that's totally valid. I would love to play around with that in a campaign. Like
Should we do a Daggerheart campaign then? It sounds like you keep saying, I would love to.
I know.
It sounds like you want to.
I mean, here's the thing.
We have a set.
Always want to play TTRPGs.
We have a set.
If you guys want a Daggerheart campaign of questionable length,
sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/nerdynightly.
Yeah, go do it.
At the $10 tier, because that's going to be our TTRPG tier, and you'll be able to influence games from there.
It's going to be so fun. That is an interesting one where I would love to play around with homebrewing when you can use certain abilities and have them take effect. Because I think that, tying them to the role play aspect is just more interesting for me.
Yeah, me as well.
And like, you know, with the Fungirl, you can communicate, but it's like you have to talk with your DM about what that looks like and how you achieve it. And so I think with some of these other abilities, you can have those same conversations and just set that at the beginning in your session zero.
Yeah.
So,
But this is just one of those abilities. I think it's a great ability. It's very useful.
It's great.
Being able to reroll a one on the hope die, awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I love being able to reroll ones and twos.
Well, and it's just, because if you're rolling a one on a hope die, obviously the fear die is higher. And so
it's a critical success.
Or that, which is very fun. But I think if you crit successed on two ones, you wouldn't want to
reroll. Oh, I'm not going
to
reroll that. Anyways. No.
Yes.
Agreed. All right, next up is a class that I will never play, because I find it boring. I am that bisexual. I do not play as humans.
You just want to be a little goblin guy.
Never. The only time I've played as a human in a TTRPG game is in my first Baldur's Gate run, because I was playing as myself. That was the, like, conceit of the run, that it was me as myself trying to romance Lazel successfully.
Gotcha.
I've
also never played a human.
I have no desire to play a human in a TTRPG. Well, I always want to be something weird, like a Leonin or...
Yeah,
oh, I no, don't... No, what? Was Jackson an elf in the one we did?
We were half-elves, I thought.
We were half-elves, yeah. No, yeah, I don't play humans.
Oh, no, wait, you might have been a human and I was an elf and we had a half-elf daughter.
Oh, that's what it was. That, so I'm a liar.
I played human
exactly once at a table.
Yes.
Online.
You're a liar.
But their ability's cool because it's not just you get a plus one to everything, which is why variant humans are better. Their perseverance, when you fail a roll that utilized one of your experiences, you may spend a hope to re-roll. You must take the new result.
So another role play directed ability.
And something that you can use a lot.
True.
Right. I think that that's...
As much hope as you want. You can reroll. As long as you got hope, you can do whatever you want.
I think that's my consistent criticism of the ones that I haven't loved are either like the dwarf, where I feel like it's niche for what you spend it on, or some of the ones that are once per session. I like that some of these are things that your character is doing regularly because it's a part of who they are.
Yeah.
And I want to, I personally as a GM, and this might just be me and might not play at every table, I want my players to be doing stuff because of their character's backgrounds, because of their character's race, how that influences the way that they interact with the world.
For sure.
And so this human one, I like that it's not like once per session.
Yeah.
It's when you fail a roll that utilize your experience.
Mm-hmm.
human beings are like, you know what? My experience failed me here, but I'm going to push through anyway.
Yeah.
That is a very human thing to
very
do.
Very human.
Especially yes. if you are a mediocre white man with a lot of faith in yourself. You will continue on, even if all of the odds are against you.
I want to play a human character that's just like the mediocre white man with experience in like mansplaining. I think that would be great for a comedy
simping
campaign.
For Elon on Twitter as your experience.
Simping for Elon. So you know a lot. Well, here's the weird part is you would like think that you know a lot about like, you know, cars, electric cars.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But like maybe.
But you push through anyway, so you reroll. That's very funny. Through.
But I do want to point out that this one is definitely, it does rely on experiences. Talk to your DM, GM about, like, how to best fit those in. Really, like, hone in on those experiences. I think that's going to take a lot of conversation. Because, again, the experiences are a little, I think that they could be a little bit confusing at first.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I was part of the closed beta.
Yeah.
For the character creation. Before it was the open beta that it is now. And the feedback that I gave them was, I left experiences blank because I didn't understand what I was trying to do.
Yes.
Especially in the character creation, I think it's a little bit easier once I had the full book and I was able to understand what they were a little better.
Absolutely.
But when I was doing just the character creation, I was looking at it like, I don't know what you mean by generate experience.
Yeah.
And so I do agree with you. I think that is one of those things where I don't want the system they came up with to change because I like it. I like the idea of experiences. I like the +2/+1.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that. I think that they need to figure out the language to express what they want that to be better. And I think that it would start with there just being a list of optional ones that you can just take.
Yes. Yeah. And it's something that we've talked about. If we decide to make more Daggerheart content, one of the ideas we came up with was like for new players, a list of possible generic experiences to either take and use directly or to inspire you to come up with an experience relevant to your character.
Yeah.
I think that they should include some of those in their like rule set, but if you want to see something like that from us, we can absolutely put that together, because it was the one thing reading through these rules that I was like, oh god, depending on how I'm feeling that day, this would be really hard to come up with.
I just think that it's,
you just might not be feeling creative and be like, I don't know.
I think that it is consistently something in this like first week and a half of the Daggerheart system that I'm seeing criticized a lot.
Yeah.
And I think the criticism is not of how it plays, because having played it, I think it plays really well.
Yeah.
I think watching Brian come up with reasons why his experiences were relevant, because he used them the most in our game.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that I really, as a GM, I really liked that.
Yeah.
I think that it is just the communication in the book right now that needs to be touched up, which is why they're doing an open beta, right? But I think a lot of the criticism is people not understanding it, not that it's not good. And I hope the Daggerheart team sees this. Because here's what I don't want you to do. I don't want you guys to look at the criticism and be like, oh, the system is bad.
Right.
The system is really fun and I like it a lot. I want you to keep that system in place.
Yeah.
Just explain it in a way that is easier for other people to understand so that they understand this is actually a really fun thing to play with.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that fair?
Oh, I think that's totally fair. I think that like having, I think that providing, I know they provided a couple examples, but I think providing a list of, if you are playing a rogue, here are some lists of experiences that you may use or
but
help
don't
you
have
to
inspire,
or inspire you to do something else. Because some days I just feel like my brain is not firing on all cylinders. And if I'm trying to make a character and come up with like experiences, that feels to me personally like the most daunting part of it.
I also think that the word experience has a connotation in TTRPG games that they're not helping themselves by choosing something that people have a understanding of what that word means in relationship to a game like this.
Interesting.
And so I do think that that is part of the problem, is that when people think TTRPG and experiences, they are thinking, they already have something in mind. So not only does Daggerheart have to do something different, but it also has to like unconvince you of your previous notion that most people like me have had about the way experience works in these kind of games for over 30 years, right?
Yeah. You could have something like lived experience.
I like lived experience.
Lived experience, because that is still very, very close. You don't have to change much, but it does differentiate, I think, a little bit better. Because I agree, that is one thing to not take for granted, is that people have, it's like when we talked about initiative, people have a very specific set view of what words mean in relation to games.
100%.
And initiative is one of them for sure. Experience is also definitely one of them. So maybe tweaking the language around it would solve a lot of confusion.
No, I agree.
Yeah, okay.
What's next?
Next we have Qatari. Those of Qatari ancestry are feline humanoids with soft fur and high triangular ears.
Hot cat boys.
Or cat girls. E-girls, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the OnlyFans character curation race.
The Qatari? Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah.
I would be like a cat e-girl so fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and I would make it like such a like unexpected class. You know what I mean? Like, it would be... like almost like a seraph, and like my like god patron would be like RNG Jesus or something like that, right? For my like
you heal shooters. People by telling them, like, you give healing instructions. What's their ability?
I love it. Feline instincts. Mm-hmm. On any agility rolls, you may mark a stress to re-roll your hope die. If you do, take the new result instead.
Yeah, I think that this is a pretty standard idea. Like, it plays into the race really well.
Yeah.
I think that it is useful. I think that agility is something they're going to use a lot of. So I don't feel like it is, you know, it is niche and it's a bit specific, unlike some of these that are a bit more generic and a little bit more general use case.
Yeah.
But it is also, I think it feels right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is one of those things where it kind of is just like a little bit worse than the halfling one, because for the halfling one,
how is it worse than it's very different from the halfling one. That only rerolls a one. You get to reroll your die.
To just reroll the hope die. I mean, I guess you can only use this ability if it rolls a one, but if you roll a two or a three or something low.
Yeah. Or if you roll a six, mm-hmm. Like, this is one of those abilities, right, where say you roll a four and a five, right, mm-hmm. but you roll the five is fear, and you're looking at it going, all right, no matter, like, say the check is an 18, and even if you roll a 12 with hope, you are not going to succeed, but there is a better than average chance that you can roll a failure with hope. This is one of those abilities where you might take that stress for the chance to roll with hope or to match the fear die and get a critical success.
I think it would definitely, it's one of, in opposition actually to some of these, it is something that might be better at higher levels when you have more stress slots.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of the stress ones are going to scale based on how minimal it is to take one stress. Right? All of these stress abilities are going to have that same element of, for the fairies, flying for a stress, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that this is one of those abilities where the math of it might not be about rerolling to succeed the check, but rerolling hope to
just hopefully, not have a fear.
But if you rolled an 11 on your fear die,
you're
probably not going to reroll it because you're still going to have fear anyway.
Well, and I think, it's... only on agility rolls.
Yeah, and so that makes it a little bit roleplay focused.
Yeah, but. I was like, you can't do it in combat to stop the GM from getting a turn.
No, but you do have to roll agility in combat if you want to move outside of your close range, right?
Okay,
so agility is the thing that you're going to roll most typically to avoid opportunity attack.
True.
In Daggerheart.
Okay.
So being able to avoid an opportunity attack to move very far on your turn, and say you want to move like 45 feet, you want to move into your far range.
Yeah.
You're going to have to roll an agility roll to avoid being attacked on your way in.
Yeah.
You roll with fear. Uh-oh, you've just made it the enemy's turn. You can spend a stress to roll with hope so that you are hopefully taking that turn back.
To hopefully roll with hope, yeah.
I think that there's a lot of uses here in combat, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Especially for someone, a spellcaster or a ranger with a bow who wants to be able to basically have advantage on expeditious retreats.
Oh, I see.
Not the spell, but I just mean getting out.
Yes.
If you get surrounded, this basically gives you advantage on escaping that.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, interesting.
Next up is one of my favorite classes, the class I play the most in Baldur's Gate 3, the orc. I love orcs.
Uh-huh.
I love big, brawny dudes and ladies. I love my muscle mommies. Orcs. I just love orcs. It's why when I made the world for Roleplay Relay, orcs, they're not evil. They're just out there making food.
Yep.
I literally made the orcs' homeland where we grew up. It's just Alberta.
Oh, it was Alberta. Interesting.
Well, they're farmers and grazers. They're farmers and
that makes sense. I love that.
Orcs. I've always loved orcs, and so I can't wait to play an orc and have the ability Sturdy. When you should mark an armor slot, roll a d6. On a 5+, you don't mark the armor slot, but still reduce the incoming damage by your armor score.
Great.
Seraph orcs are
great.
There is a 1 in 3 chance. 1 in 3 chance.
1 in 3.
You don't have to use your armor to use your armor.
33%.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Seraph orcs are going to be busted.
Yeah.
And what is the other one? Guardian.
Guardians.
Seraph and guardian orcs. Mwah.
Yeah.
You are never gonna fucking do damage like that. They are so strong.
Oh, sick ability. I love it.
I love it. Yeah.
I don't think that there is a like scaling issue. It's only useful at lower or higher levels.
Yeah.
I think it's very well rounded. 10 out of 10. No notes.
Yeah. I think that you get to use it a lot. I think that it gives you a lot of opportunities in terms of the role play of like how orcs handle combat.
Mm-hmm.
I've never loved the orc. Racial ability in D&D where they're just like they get knocked down, they get up again.
The dropping to 1 to 0 HP makes you actually drop to 1.
Yeah, it is useful, but it's not that useful because 1 HP is you're so squishy at that point.
I find that useful, but that's a different. We're not talking about D&D right now.
I just think that this is a more useful ability in terms of A, giving the player playing the orc a lot of roleplay options to like say what that looks like.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of fun ways to interact with this ability.
Yeah.
And also, I think that it is very useful.
I agree.
This is in my top 5 of the abilities on these cards.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hands down. That's like amazing ability.
It helps that it's one of my favorite races.
Next, we have the Ribbit.
Yeah. You guys know it's on the thumbnail.
You know
everyone's obsessed with the fucking ribbits.
I don't blame you. Why really don't.
How could you not be? They're frogs. They're cute as fuck.
They resemble anthropomorphic frogs. I'm just making sure I read that right.
You did.
With protruding eyes and webbed hands and feet.
Yeah.
Pretty cute.
Got those sticky fingers.
Amphibious. You can breathe and move underwater just as easily as on land.
I do like that the Oop. Galapas don't get that.
Yeah.
Galapas can't breathe underwater.
Well, because here's the thing.
I don't think frogs, I don't think turtles can in real life.
It depends on if it's a turtle or a tortoise. Like, some live in the ocean.
Wait, what?
What?
There's a difference between turtles and tortoises?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm learning something. Explain.
I don't actually know what the difference is,
but they
are different creatures.
If anyone's an expert on turtles, could you drop that knowledge down below? We'll let chat do it.
Now I'm like nervous, but I swear that they're different.
I thought tortoises were just bigger. I didn't realize that it was a like freshwater, saltwater thing.
I don't know if that is exactly it, but I do know
someone in the comments will tell us what we're doing wrong.
Thank you. What's the ability? Appreciate it. So you can breathe and move underwater. That makes sense.
I love that.
Long tongue. You can use your long, powerful tongue to grab onto things close to you.
Show me what that tongue do, am I
exactly.
right?
Exactly. You may choose to mark stress to unleash it as a finesse close weapon that does D12 physical damage. Which is like just better than the headbutt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here's a weird thing, right? Fun, you have to give the GM fear. To headbutt for a D8.
But I think that this is where this might be against HP, and this is...
There's got to be something about the Fawn card that we're missing.
I think that we're not understanding what direct means in the Fawn card.
Sure.
It depends what you mean, what the word is means, right?
Yes. Hopefully we can get some clarification and we can, share that. I think that obviously this is basically a first draft, right? We're still in beta. Like there's things that are going to need to be clarified, but I just do find it interesting. The similarities, but differences between those two things. So you do mark a stress instead of giving the GM a fear, but it does... D12.
And you can grab shit with your tongue, which is just the best for roleplay. I want to play a ribbit. I want to play Jar Jar Binks. and play a ribbit.
Okay.
That is going around just using its tongue to steal stuff. And I just play a rogue. And I just, like, I'm, like, stealing stuff from people. Like, they, like, the shopkeeper turns around and I just, like, shoot my tongue up and steal something off the shelf. I think there's so much potential
like
here.
That's on Tatooine where he's just,
yeah,
like,
yeah, in Shmi's house where he's, like, when they're at dinner and he steals the apple out of the bowl.
I was thinking,
Qui-Gon gets him.
If you played, you know, a not combat heavy campaign and you played a ribbit that was, like, in the service industry and that was how they, like, carried like 12 plates or like gave drinks around. Ooh, like, you know, somebody like grabbing things and like, I don't know what I'm imagining, but I swear there's like a video game where you like grab things and chuck them and you're just like kind of stand in a place and like direct the like flow of.
I don't know.
Maybe I'm losing my mind. But we have one more.
I like the ribbits a lot. I think that they're the cutest race in here.
Really? I don't know. I think the goblins.
That's close. The goblins, the ribbits being totally new, though, I think is why people are latching onto them.
I hear that.
The final race. Definitely, this was all alphabetical so that there is no judgment possible in the order that we did these in. We're ending with the simias.
Hell yeah.
The simias are monkey people.
Planet
or
of the
ape
apes.
People.
Yeah.
Oh,
Planet of the Apes.
You could do a whole Planet of the Apes campaign with just simias and humans.
You could.
That's actually a really fun idea.
I should.
That movie's coming out. We should do. No, I'm not joking. We should do.
I've never seen any of them though.
But we should do a Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes one shot when the movie comes out.
All right, that'd be fun.
Stay tuned. Don't steal our ideas. If you do that, I will know.
We'll know who you are.
Nimble is their ability. They take advantage on agility rolls that involve balancing and climbing and add +1 to your evasion at character creation.
Look, +1 evasion is pretty great.
Yeah. I think the balancing and climbing is a little bit niche, but...
Well, it's very specific because, like, what if you are... It's something to take into account the setting.
Yeah.
Putting Spider-Man... in, like, a small town as opposed to New York. I think, like, I just mean, like, you know, if you're going to be in a desert that has absolutely no trees.
Yeah.
That's maybe not going to utilize this
ancestry
to the best of its abilities.
Maybe a sand boat comes along and you have to fight off desert pirates. And they have, like, a boat pulled by sand seals. And...
Is this a One Piece thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There are sand pirates in One Piece.
Great.
But also, like, I think that simias would be really fun. I created a warlock for a one-shot that we were supposed to play that unfortunately we didn't get to play in Denver. But he was an air genasi who had lived his whole life in the crow's nest of a pirate ship. And he had, like, recently left the crew of that pirate ship to set off on his own.
Nice.
That would be a fun character to play with a simia in, like, a pirate ship campaign, because people love pirate ship campaigns.
That
or
is
airship
true.
Campaigns.
Yeah.
If you're going to play, like, an airship, having a simia on your crew who can climb up and down the ropes really quick has advantage on all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that is a really... There are settings where I think that this is so fun.
Oh, 100%.
And provides so many opportunities.
Yeah.
And I think that it... Like the Qatari ability, I think that it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's one of those ones that feels right.
Yeah.
Sometimes in roleplay, things just feel right. And some of these abilities feel a little bit magical in ways that don't.
Yeah.
This ability just feels right to me.
Yeah. It is definitely one, like, I would very much talk to my GM about the campaign setting before picking this ancestry.
I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I'm not a min-maxer, so I don't care about that. I'm picking the race that I want to play. I'm not the kind of person that's like, I need to be able to use my ability.
Well, it's not necessarily like the abilities. It's just like if I am like a climbing like monkey person and the DM's like, I have this really cool idea that like it's going to be like a deserted desert island. And there's no trees. And I would be like, well, what am I doing there? Like, why would I, like, it's...
Also, how many sessions are we spending on a deserted desert island with nothing on it?
Look, hey, I'm thinking on the fly here. I'm just saying, I think, you know, something to take into consideration in character creation. You know, talk to the GM, see what they're thinking.
Communication. I 100% agree. I hear what you're saying. I totally agree with you.
You're just giving me shit.
No, I just disagree. I don't care about any of that. Right. I'm going to create a character... regardless of the setting, and then hope that it works. And if it doesn't, that's extra hilarious to me.
Love that.
No, but that's how I create. I'm not a min-maxer. I don't care about that stuff. I'm not trying to do the most damage per turn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'll never see me make like build videos where I'm like, I take 4 levels of this, 2 levels of this, 3 levels to create the ultimate turn where I can do 76. That stuff doesn't interest me about roleplay. I want to play a character. And so for me, I'm going to pick the race that fits that. And if I like the ability, great. If I don't, I won't use it. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing where it doesn't change the game for me as much.
Yeah.
However, the nice thing about this system is there are so many abilities that are very easy to use. Yeah. And I think that fit into the system that they've made.
There's a lot of ancestries here.
Yeah,
there's 18. A lot.
This is a long video
to pick from. Yeah, sorry about that. But I'm so excited at the potential for these and the potential for the art.
Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of horny catboy art. Look, that comes out of this game.
Bunny was rude. That was rude. I was not ready. I was not prepared mentally for that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was. Marisha Ray knew what she was doing.
Kicked in the face in like the best way, but yeah, wow.
Yeah, so those are all the racial abilities. Let us know how we messed up, because I'm sure there's something. I feel like people are going to have a really strong opinion on one of the ones that I didn't like, and that's fine. Tell me about it down below. We'll keep talking about this as we move forward with our coverage of Daggerheart.
Mm-hmm.
We have
discussing Daggerheart.
A lot of videos coming up. Next one will probably be talking about all the abilities that you get from the heritages.
Yeah.
Loreborn, Slyborn, Seaborn, all those. And then following that, we are planning on doing a video on all of the spells for each class. We're going to do them class by class by class.
Yeah, it's going to be a big video, but...
Well, multiple videos.
Yeah.
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 So we'll do like Guardian, Seraph. We're going to break down and give our thoughts on every single ability in the game at this point.
Yeah.
Those are going to be coming out on this channel over the next bit with shorts and stuff going out everywhere else. But this is the Roleplay Relay channel. We're trying to grow it and maybe eventually move our actual place here. We're not sure yet how that's going to work.
Subscribe and let us know.
But yeah, like and subscribe.
There is like if there is something you want to see. If you're mm-hmm. like, look, this part of Daggerheart, I don't understand. Can you do a video on this? Or if you think that the experiences thing is something that you'd be interested in, let us know. You know, if you want to just see us build a bunch of different characters, let us know.
Yeah.
We love TTRPGs. This brings us joy, so we're happy to do it. So just tell us if you want to see it.
Also, we are going to be having a level 10 one shot coming up. The penultimates from our first Daggerheart one shot are returning to try the game out at the ends of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to be bringing that to you soon. Follow our socials around the internet so you can see when that is happening. I'm at Nerdy Nightly.
I'm at Claris Polaris.
As always, y'all, do something nerdy tonight.
Bye, guys.
Bye.